So before I start, I just want to ask, it's like, is this vocabulary difficult for people? Some of you? The words? Okay. So you've seen the concept before, but the vocabulary is new. So for some of you, like, from whatever Chinese or Japanese, it's like you have to translate back to how you learn it. I see. So this is going to be an English class, right? In translation. So I realize sometimes there are certain things in the slides that are just kind of words. You might not know what the words mean. So if you ever see that, just stop me during the lecture and just say, okay, I don't know what this means. And if it's not important, I'll just say, you don't need to know it. But if it is important, I'll just tell you. Because I got a very good question in the morning, so asking what does it mean, cytosolic. So cytosol is just the stuff in the cell. Okay, cytosol, the word cytosol just means not the membrane area, but just the stuff that's floating around. You think of it as a kind of just fluid, water kind of in the cell. The reason it's called cytosol is because that fluid is called cytoplasm. So that's why it's cytosol. Like, you don't have to kind of, I wouldn't say it's like kind of required to actually know that. It's just that when I talk about it, sometimes I say, well, sometimes something that's in the membrane versus sometimes something that's just in the cytosol, so just floating around inside the cell. So the point is, like, just try to stop me if you can when you don't understand something that's on the slide. On the other hand, though, like, you guys don't have to worry about, like, every tiny detail. It's okay. Like, some of the detail with very specific things here that you basically don't have to know. It's just for me to kind of give you some extra information for the future. For, like, exams and stuff like that, basically you have to know big pictures. You have to know, when I talk about later, the information, for example, going from the DNA to the RNA to the protein. Now you should know that idea. That's how the information is flowing in the cell. And the process of that is, I'm going to go talk about that today a little bit. Like things like that, right? And then you should know the names of the organelles that are in bold in this lecture. Hopefully that's, you just have to remember that. I can't just, if you don't know what ribosome means, then, you should just know that. So today I'm going to finish the organelles, and then if we have time, we're going to start on cell cycles. Don't worry if it looks like the syllabus is slightly, we're slightly behind the syllabus. It's fine. It's just whatever we get through, we get through. And also, some of the lectures are shorter than others. Like the cell cycle one is also shorter. Okay, so you don't have to worry about that. And also, the origin of life will be made a little bit shorter as well. Okay? I got some email questions about this, but I want to reaffirm. Everything on the test, every single question is in the slides, actually. The question itself may not be on the slide, but the answer, the actual answer of it is written on the slide somewhere. Okay? Now, that doesn't mean you have to know every single little detail, here, like these little, what is that, 0.25 micron? How many micron was that? Like, you don't have to know that, right? So I'm giving you a lot of little details here, but again, it's your job to kind of select out what is important based on coming here, right? Because that's why you come here. You come here so that you can figure out what I talk about and what's relevant, but what I talk about and what's on the exam is actually written on the slide somewhere. I check the questions. Everything is on it's on the slide. Okay, but for your own information, I hope that you get a chance to read the book. the book is very good. And if not, then at least go online and click through those that online textbook I was telling you about. That was very nice. Okay, so let me continue now. So again, like, stop me and ask me questions whenever you like. So I'm going to start with ribosomes now. So last time we talked about the nucleus, right? I just give you a very quick reminder of the nucleus. Basically, we talked about the DNA. We talked about how DNA is packaged. So basically, DNA, if you think about it, it's kind of bundled up into these chromosomes. And the chromosome basically has the protein and the DNA. Right? That's what it consists of. Okay? And that's all sitting in the nucleus. I talked about how there's places within the nucleus where you have rRNA being made. rRNA actually just becomes ribosome. So that's why there's an R in front of it, because it means ribosomal RNA. So that's also where the ribosomes are actually being made. Okay, now I talk about the actual things called ribosomes. So ribosomes actually are the things that make the proteins from your genetic information. Okay, and I talked about last time how there's some of them are that's on the membrane, and some of them are just floating around. And then they have a large unit here and a small unit. And then basically the transcript it's going to go through is the RNA transcript. Okay. Now here's the process that you should be aware of. So how do you go from the genetic information to the actual stuff that's working in the cell? Well, first you have to go from the DNA to RNA. Okay, that does not happen in the ribosome. That happens in the nucleus. You don't have to know this, but there's an actual protein that actually makes it. So this figure, again, you don't have to know the detail. This just illustrates that there's a protein that goes through the DNA. And because DNA is double-stranded, it kind of unwinds it. And as it's unwound, it goes inside and makes a copy of the DNA. Now, the RNA actually has one base that's different from the DNA. But it's basically the same information. Okay, DNA and RNA are the same information, but DNA is double-stranded. And the RNA is a copy of one strand of that DNA. Okay, that's complementary. So basically it has the same information, but it's a single strand. Okay, so basically first you're going from DNA to RNA, and that process is just transcription. So the English word transcription, hopefully that makes sense, because it's just copying, it's just transcribing. That's what it means to transcribe, going from the DNA to the RNA. So it's kind of copying. Okay, now the difference between transcription and translation is the following, okay? So, I guess I need to... This here. Okay, that's better. Huh? Okay, so I talk about that again later. So transcription, after you make the RNA, then what you do is you go from the RNA into the protein, and that process is now translation, not transcription. Why is it translation? It's because you're going from the genetic information into like amino acid protein information. So it's a different language in some sense. That's why it's translated. That's why people say translation. But the idea is just that now you're going to translate that RNA strand information, which is, remember, just nucleic acid bases. So, you know, in this case it's just written as short code A, U, G, whatever, C. These are just nucleic acid bases. You don't have to know what they stand for, but you know, for example, the guanine, adenine, et cetera, et cetera. But it needs to use that information to bring in amino acids. Remember, amino acids are these guys that have nitrogen and carboxylic acid on them. You don't have to know that, but basically they are molecules that make up proteins, make up the stuff that works in your body, and they have a certain chemical structure. But what you do is that because there's actually more amino acids than bases, what you do is you go you kind of gang up, you get a triplet code. There's sets of three nucleic acids that's on the RNA. gets translated into one amino acid. Okay? So there's just like a huge table, right? Chemical table, but the chemical table just figures out what's the right one. Okay? And actually, there's actually redundant information here too, right? So let me show you the... Again, don't be alarmed. It's not the table that you have to know, right? It's kind of programmed in the cell. But this is the table, for instance. So what happens is that when the ribosome sees, you know, let's say we go to, you know, this one right here, cytosine, adenine, uracil, right? Okay. So say the ribosome sees that on the RNA, okay? Well, when it sees that, it brings in basically the right complementary to that. So the protein that actually brings it in is actually an RNA as well. It's called tRNA. But it just brings in the complementary information that has the right amino acid. And that amino acid that's attached to that particular protein is histidine. So this is just an example. You don't have to memorize, right? So the histidine is corresponding to the CAU code. But anyway, so the key, the information is just that given whatever three-letter component that you have on the RNA, it brings in some specific amino acid. And there's redundant code. So, for example, valine has four things that can code for it. Okay, and actually the first two are the same, and then the last one can be whatever. Right, it kind of wobbles a little bit. So any of those things would bring in valine. Why is that? Well, because there's more amino acids than number of bases, of course, because there's only four bases. But if you look at the triplet, right, now you have four, right, for the possible first part, four for the possible second part, four for the possible last part, and four times four, that's actually more than the number of amino acids. So therefore, you have actually a little bit more information that can be possibly coded. So therefore, you actually have redundancy in this code. Okay. Anyway, so that was a lot of detail for you, but really all you have to know is that you have the RNA information, right? That's after the transcription from the DNA. And then from the RNA information, you need to get the amino acid information that you want in the proteins. And to do that, you look at every three nucleic acids and kind of translate that into one amino acid. And there's an actual special RNA that brings that amino acid in. It's actually called a tRNA. So there's kind of a subtlety here, but basically there's actually different types of RNA. The ribosome is actually made up of rRNA. So, you know, basically there's some amino acids and also nucleic acid that kind of makes it up. Right? It's something we don't need to go into, but tRNA is actually transfer RNA, and actually it's an RNA that actually brings in amino acids. And then the mRNA is just the messenger RNA, and that's actually the actual transcript that the ribosome is actually reading through. Okay. I talked about a little bit earlier also that in between these two processes, so after transcription, you actually need to do some modification of this mRNA transcript before you can actually use it. So you cut out some things, you join something in the front, join something in the back. Okay, that's basically what's going on. And that most of the information actually you don't need. It's called, well, you don't need to know the word anyway, so you kind of just excise it, you cut it out, and then you get the finished product, mRNA, and then from there, the mRNA gets translated. Okay, there's no additional synthesis that's going on. Is that clear what ribosomes are doing? Okay, so basically you need to go from the DNA that gets transcribed to mRNA, right? And our RNA needs to be translated into proteins, right? So proteins are made up of amino acids, so therefore you have that code. Every three goes into one amino acid, And they just join as the... There's a reaction here that happens that basically joins the amino acids together as they're coming off the ribosome. Okay? So that's what ribosomes do. It's actually, you know, fairly big picture-wise, a pretty simple process. Okay? You don't have to know that. I just talked about that, actually. But, and this I already showed you. You don't really have to know this either, but basically it's just saying that ribosomes can come in different forms. So we talked about last time how they're prokaryotic cells, which are simpler, right? Remember that they're the ones that don't have the nucleus. Prokaryotic cells like bacteria, for example, the DNA just kind of floating around. Eukaryotes, they have much more complicated structure within the cell. They have membrane-bound regions in the cell, basically. And the ribosomes there is also slightly different. Yeah. Okay, so if you're ready, then we go on to the next organelle. Yes? Yeah, the good question, Yuxian, right? Yeah, good question, Yuxian. So the ribosome actually just sits in the cell. So you're talking about the ribosome, right? Not the RNA. Yeah, so the ribosome, after they're being made, they get transported to wherever they need to be. They kind of just sit there. Like, so if it's in the membrane, then it kind of just sits in the membrane, right? I'll talk about where they could be located in a second because it's in a different organelle. The ones that are just floating around the cell, they just flow around the cell. Now, it's a very good question because, well, if they're just kind of sitting there, how do you access them, right? Like, how do you get that one to make the right protein, for example? And it turns out you can actually have regulation of them as well. So basically, you put a chemical group on them to tell them that you can go, basically. So they don't move around per se. The only way that you think of them as kind of moving around is that, like, these ribosomes are sitting everywhere, and then some of them are active and some of them are not. That's the only way you think of as kind of moving around per se. Yeah, they can just become part of the membrane, yeah. The bound ones. Yeah. But the free ones are just in the cell. They're just floating around in the cell. Yeah. But both of them, so basically it's a very good question because they do different things. So the ones that are bound to the membrane, right, they're going to make things that you need to kind of, for example, if you need to put it in a vesicle, I'll talk about membrane-bound vesicles later, but something that's within the membrane. So for example, something that's a hormone or a neurotransmitter, these are things that you want active only in a certain place. You don't want it to go everywhere. So if that's the case, you want it to be in the membrane. So the way you put it in the membrane most easily is that you make it as it's coming off the ribosome within the membrane. That's why the ribosome, some those particular ones are the membrane-bound ones, is because you want to, as you're making the molecule, as you're making that protein that does a specific function that needs to be isolated, it makes it as it's going into the membrane. So it's already in the membrane when it's kind of coming out. Yeah. And there are other ones that are just freely in the cell, and again, you kind of put chemical groups there to regulate them. Yeah, it's a good question. Okay, so, and then the next organelle is basically related to Yuxian's question a little bit, right? Because I'm going to talk about now endoplasmic reticulum. I'm just going to say ER from now, not emergency room, endoplasmic reticulum. So endoplasmic reticulum, actually, it's kind of contiguous. That's a tough word. Contiguous, how do I say that? Kind of... next to the nucleus, a lot of times, right? It's kind of close to it, right? The reason is that these are actually just a lot of membranes, Right? Remember, I talked about the phospholipid bilayer last time, right? So that's a double layer, right? You have the fats and you have the polar complex molecules right there, and together they make up that membrane. So this is what the membrane looks like, and the membrane is coming off the nucleus, because you actually have stuff that's being made that can get transported directly in here. Okay. Now, what it actually is, that you have some regions that are called smooth ER and some regions that's called rough ER. And here it's very simple. All it is that the rough ER has ribosomes. That's the only difference. So the reason it's called rough is because you have these little dots, right? These little dots are actually just ribosomes. So things are being made in the rough area, being synthesized, and then whatever is synthesized is kind of goes through and becomes more of the smooth region. Okay. So let me talk about now a little bit more detail. The inner side of the ER is called a lumen. So that's the inside part, not the one that's facing the cytosol of the cell. Okay? So that's called the lumen. And again, that actual inside part actually is contiguous with the nucleus. So the smooth part of the ribosome actually can make some compounds as well. For example, it can make some lipids, it can make some steroids. So the lipids, as they're being made, they actually go into the membrane. They can also solubilize. So what does that mean? They can actually dissolve certain things as well. Okay. So, for example, they can detoxify certain things that that's not healthy for the cell. There's also a specific type of smooth ER that's called SR, sarcoplasmic reticulum, and actually that just kind of has calcium within it, for example. This is just an example of the type of ER that you can have. For rough ER, you have ribosomes on them, so you can actually make proteins. This is what I was saying about things being made within the ER with ribosomes. And as they're being made, they're actually secreted inside the ER, right? So that means it goes inside the lumen, the inside of the ER, right? The part that's, so the part that is in here, right? These little grooves, that's because that's the lumen. And the outside is facing the cell, facing the cytoplasm, okay? So the rough ER, again, you have ribosomes that are attached on them, so it can actually make protein that goes directly inside the lumen, okay? And the lumen can actually kind of, at its outer edges, bud off. And the budding off part is actually, they're actually called vesicles. So vesicles are like this. This is a vesicle. It's just a membrane-bound compartment. Right, so you just have, for example, a sphere or some structure that has stuff within it. It's just a piece of membrane with something reactive inside. Okay. But that can actually bud off from the lumen of the ER. So you can imagine basically a process going like this, right? So the big story. The big story is that you have ribosomes inside and of the ER. And as the RNA information comes through, some of that actually gets into this rough ER, and the rough ER actually can make proteins or make other things that goes inside the lumen of the ER. And in the case of smooth ER, you can actually make other stuff as well, like membranes. And after they're being made, they can actually bud off directly from the ER. Okay, so that's kind of the information that you're going from, that general process that we talked about, going from transcription to translation to protein synthesis, and that is also reflected in this overall schematic of the cell. Alright, so that's what rough ER does. Rough ER can actually also make some phospholipids as well. So basically, the ER in general can actually make new membrane as well. And that makes sense because it's an organelle made up of membranes. And it can also make membranes, right? And when it makes membranes, it kind of adds to its collection of lipids, membranes. Okay. So this is similar to what I talked about last time. But again, hormones, right? Hormones are things that are acting on outside the cell, right? So for example, testosterone, or adrenaline. Adrenaline, that's a good one to work with. For example, when you're running and when you're stressed or something like that, then adrenaline is being secreted, right? So the way it's actually made is that you have, again, it being adrenaline being made in the rough ER, and after if it's made, it goes through this little vesicle. It goes through a different organelle that I'll talk about later, but eventually they get collected in the vesicle, and that vesicle actually secretes that stuff outside the cell. Why is that? Why do you need to be outside? Because when it's outside, this hormone, adrenaline, for example, is actually going to act on a different cell. And the different cell has receptors on it so that when it recognizes the adrenaline, it will do some other stuff. For example, increase your stress level, activate energy resource because you're stressed out and then you need to make more things. If you're running, then you need more sugar, you need more ATP, more energy, right? So that's basically what the process is. So this process is basically called secretion, right? So this is like the secretory pathway because it's secreting things outside the cell. So again, the secretion part of the process is you're going from basically nucleus and rough ER. It goes to a different organelle I'll talk about in a second, Golgi, but eventually they become part of vesicles after they've been made, and that vesicle gets bound to the outside of the cell and released. Okay. So that's kind of a big part of what ER is doing. It's making stuff that needs to be put inside a vesicle. Okay. The other thing that I talked about in this figure is a good way to introduce it now. It's called the Golgi apparatus, right? So the Golgi apparatus is the next step up from the ER. Okay, so ER is the thing that a lot of things are being made, for example, lipids and proteins, right? But after it's being made, it actually needs a way to figure out where to put things, right? Because think about it, you making a lot of things. You're making some hormones, like adrenaline, that needs to be going outside, right? But you're also making enzymes, for instance, that's making certain things. Or you need enzymes that break down, you know, toxic molecules, right? You can't just push that all outside the cell. So there has to be a way of sorting these different things that are being made and transporting them to the right place. And so that's what the Golgi apparatus does. I think about it as a yubinchoku. So it's like the post office, right? So stuff that's coming into the Golgi apparatus, you kind of put, you know, not stamps, but addresses, for example, on them. And then the address kind of tells you where to go next. Okay, so that's what the Golgi apparatus is doing. So the Golgi has this kind of what's called the cis and the trans phase, right? So the cis phase is kind of the part that's like close to the ER, right? It's the part that's coming, receiving information from the ER. And then it does the processing it needs. Again, the processing is mostly putting sugars or different types of groups on these proteins or molecules or whatever you need to. And then as it's flowing through onto the other side, the trans phase is now going to shift this stuff out to wherever it needs to go to. And vesicles are coming off of that as well. So again, the ER, remember the ER, the end product, a lot of times is also a vesicle. So the vesicle goes in and kind of fuses into the Golgi. The Golgi needs to do whatever additional processing it does. usually addressing and stamping and figuring out where it needs to go. And then on the trans phase of that, it releases it and it goes to where it needs to go. So this is what it looks like. Okay. So, I just told you that, but I'll say it again. So the cis part of it receives that cargo, right, so it's proteins, molecules, whatever you want, from the ER. The trans phase part of it pushes off. Now it's ready to go. It's got the right chemical marker on these vesicles, right? On these proteins, that it's now ready to go to where it needs to go. If it's outside the cell, inside the cell, to the nucleus, wherever it needs to go. It's a very dynamic structure, right? So what that means is that it's putting the right tags on them. So sugars can be used as tags, for instance. Remember phosphate was a big thing that we talked about, part of the ATP, for instance, and also other things, other proteins that it modifies. So it can also put phosphates on them. That's also a way for the cell to understand where this, what kind of information is, you know, within these vesicles. And of course, also the things that's actually within the membrane and transporting them out to different places. Now, if it's sending this information outside the cell, then it's called exocytosis. Exo means outside. Cyto means cell. So it's just outside cell. Okay? English class. Exocytosis just means you're pushing stuff outside the cell. So it's basically equivalent to secretion, the secretory thing I talked about earlier. Exocytosis means putting stuff outside the cell. So what that means is that it's basically getting these cargo from the ER, and the ER goes to the Golgi, the cis side of Golgi, and then the cis side goes to the trans side of Golgi after it gets processed. That goes to the vesicle. Vesicle goes outside the cell. That's exocytosis. Okay. And again, that's, for example, hormones that you need to secrete outside the cell. So, so I talked about this already, but transport vesicles are coming out from the trans side of the Golgi. And this is what kind of it looks like. Okay, so there I have a movie here, and this is just basically what people do is they put a dye in the cell, and so that you can see if this kind of molecules within it being going from ER to Golgi and going up. So this is what it looks like. You see these vesicles coming in. it's kind of hard to see exactly what's going on, huh? The idea is that you have stuff that's going from the ER, going into the Golgi, and it's being processed, and after it's processed, it's going out. Might be hard to see that. It's a movie. Okay. Okay, so any questions so far about ribosome, ER, and Golgi? They're kind of one complex kind of thing, you know, one structure. You're going, I'll just recap. The big idea is that you have the genetic information, you need to go to the RNA, and then from there, that ribosome is actually going to make these proteins or molecules that you need, and then they get transported ER to Golgi, Golgi to outside the cell, or to wherever it needs to go. Right. Okay. Okay, and then the remaining organelles are kind of specialized structures, right? So the core ones we talked about already, that's the main ones that you need for the cell to survive. You need to make proteins for the cell to survive. The other ones are specialized for different things. So first of all, I want to talk about lysosomes, right? So lysosome actually, it turns out, is just a specialized membrane-bound structure. Right, so I talked about vesicle earlier. It's actually just a vesicle-bound structure. Now, the special thing about lysosome is that it has certain digestive enzymes within it. So within this membrane-bound structure, a vesicle-like structure, it has certain enzymes that breaks things down, right? Eats things up, basically, right? And it does this in an acidic environment. So I talk about in the first lecture how about pH, right? So pH is just basically, if it's less than 7, then it's acidic. But the idea is just that in this environment, it's an acidic environment that can break things down. So acid is something that can dissolve things, right? You probably know just by having used them in the past. So for example, in the process of phagocytosis, so this is kind of opposite of exocytosis that I talked about earlier. Exocytosis is pushing stuff outside the cell. Phagocytosis is eating stuff up from outside the cell, going inside the cell. So in that process, you have these, for example, foods or whatever, or bacteria or whatever, bad things or whatever, they can actually get joined to a part of the cell that has a specific receptor on it. When it gets joined, it actually gets into a vesicle, right? So again, these are actually only in animal cells, not in plants, right? So eukaryotes as well. So inside this vesicle or vacuole, you have this food that's inside, right? Now, in order to digest this, you actually need stuff coming in from the lysosome. So the lysosome comes in and fuses with this food vacuole, and those enzymes can now work in a special environment, right? So within this environment, it's more acidic than the cytosol of the cell, so therefore it's actually working to digest these food molecules. And after it digests, you have all these extra molecules that you can now use for components that you need to. Or you can break down and get new sugars or whatever it needs to do. Okay. So I'm going to skip this slide, but basically the idea is that actually the lysosome can actually come from some of the previous systems. But, you know, you don't have to worry about that. What you should know is that the lysosome, what's going on is phagocytosis. That's kind of the important things that can happen within lysosomes, right? A special form of phagocytosis called autophagy is the same thing as phagocytosis, except that instead of taking in stuff from outside the cell, it's just recycling the cell's own materials. So you put the stuff that you don't need anymore, old stuff that you need to recycle, you put that in the vesicle, and the lysosome can actually access that and break that down as well. So autophagy is just a special case, basically. It's different from phagocytosis, but it's similar to it, but except that it's just using its own cell's own materials. But anyway, so the enzymes actually, the reason you need them at a certain pH is that the enzymes actually do not work in the regular pH of 7, which is neutral. It actually needs to work in an acidic environment. And so that's the reason for that is just the chemical structure of these enzymes. The chemical structure, the pocket where it's working, so it has a little active site, they call it, where it actually works, where the molecule binds and it does its work. Well, that pocket is only going to be active when it's acidic, okay, chemically. Okay, so phagocytosis, again, it takes in the food or organisms or whatever, and now it has this food that's found inside a big vesicle. We just call them the vacuole. It's just a same as vesicle, basically. And then it fuses with the lysosome, and after fusing with the lysosome can actually go in, work in an acidic environment to break things down. One example in humans are macrophages. Macrophages are part of your immune system. And so these are just immune cells, but it actually works to break down kind of bad things outside the cell. For example, bad bacteria, for example. It goes in and surrounds that bacteria. That bacteria gets into a big vacuole. Lysosome goes in and breaks it down, right? Eats it up. very aggressive things. Autophagy, I already talked about, so stuff that you don't need within the cell already, you can recycle that. There's also a disease called Tay-Sachs disease, right? So this is still, so I wanted to go back and look at possible applications. So Tay-Sachs disease actually is a genetic problem, disease, in which there's a specific enzyme that doesn't work anymore. And that's genetic, so that's always coming from the DNA, right? So the DNA that's coding for this is messed up in some way that you can't make the right enzyme. When it doesn't make the right enzyme, it turns out there's a lot of lipids that's being accumulated, right? And when you accumulate a lot of lipids, actually, the enzyme usually goes and breaks that down. So this is, I failed to mention, but the enzyme is something that's in the lysosome, okay, in this Tay-Sachs disease. The Tay-Sachs disease, you have an enzyme in the lysosome that's now doesn't work anymore as well. Then what happens is that it doesn't break down the lipids as quickly as it needs to. And then what happens is that you get these very kind of weird-looking... If you look at a Tay-Sachs patient, they have these kind of, you know, faces that are like, kind of, because of this problem, having too much lipids accumulate within the cells. And that also causes a lot of different problems too, right? Like, so in humans, as in other creatures, one problem leads to all kinds of interesting side effects, and you have mental deficits actually with these people, and you know, various, mental and social problems, and it doesn't, and it comes from, even though there's all these big disease phenotypes that you can see, it actually just comes to a very specific cause, Tay-Sachs disease, which is a deficit in a specific enzyme that's within the lysosome, and it doesn't allow you to break down lipids easily. Okay, so you don't have to know that. I'm gonna not talk about this part of it, so you don't have to know this. Basically, the only thing that maybe even a little bit relevant is that endosomes are just actually the stuff that's coming in from the phagocytosis. After you pick it up, it actually becomes an endosome. The same thing as when I say food vacuum, but then it gets eaten up by the lysosome. So you don't have to know this slide. Okay. Again, lysosomes are working in this whole process of endocytosis, right, which is it's basically just phagocytosis, stuff coming in into the cell. And then at that point, it's called a primary lysosome. At that point, it's an endosome, and then it fuses with a primary lysosomes. The primary just means that it hasn't gotten access to these food molecules yet. So it doesn't have anything to work with yet. Once it fuses together, it's just called a secondary lysosome. That just means that now the enzymes within the lysosome is actually working with the food. Okay? So just, you know, first there's nothing in it, now there's something in it. So that's why you go from primary to secondary. Just words. And also you can do that with autophagy. If there's something that you don't need anymore, in this case they're illustrating a mitochondrion, you don't need that anymore or it's broken, then it gets packaged in the membrane, and the membrane again fuses with a primary lysosome, and that lysosome goes in and digests it. So this is kind of a nice picture of what's going on this slide right here. Okay. Any question about lysosomes? So this is a movie of phagocytosis. What it's gonna look like is just something that's actually eating up this other cell, this big cell called dictyo, that's actually eating up a small cell, a yeast cell. Right. So it's phagocytosis in action. So the big one here is the green one. It goes and eats up. You see that? Boom! It's gone. And then it's now digesting. Oh, it ate another one. I show that again because it's really fast. So again, the red guys are the yeast cells and it's being eaten up. Boom! Eaten up, and then now basically the lysosome is going to work. Right? So this is phagocytosis, and after the phagocytosis, lysosome comes in, does its job. Okay. So hopefully you guys know lysosome pretty well, right? I probably went a little bit more detail than I needed to, but it's okay. Okay, so halfway through, we're going to, the rest of the organelles are not kind of as important, so I'll just give you some detail, but you don't have to know a lot of detail. Okay, so in so I talk about lysosomes, which are only in animals, okay, only in animals, but plants also have some that stuff that's only in plants as well. So for one example, they're called plant vacuoles. So plant vacuoles are just actually the majority of the plants, actually. So there's these big vacuoles, and actually they're just a big membrane-bound structure, and inside you have a lot of water and a lot of different ions and nutrients, right? So it's just a way for the plants to actually store all that stuff. It's called plant vacuoles. Okay. One thing that you might want to know about plant vacuoles is that it actually regulates how the plant's actually able to stand up, right? So it turns out the plants, if you go and touch a plant and feel a plant, for example, leaves, right? They have this particular rigidity to it. The stem of the plant also kind of has this fibrous component. And the reason it's kind of still pretty strong is actually because there's pressure within the cell. And that pressure is actually coming in, for example, from the vacuole. Because the vacuole has a high concentration of stuff, chemicals, within it. When it has high chemical concentration, what that means is that water wants to go in. Because water always goes into stuff that has high concentration. Okay, that's just the way water works. But when water likes to go in, what that means is that it actually now has pressure built up. Right, there's a certain rigidity that comes in from the water. And that particular pressure is just called osmotic pressure. So by changing the amount of nutrients that's actually inside these vacuoles, you can actually control how much pressure you can build up. So how soft or how solid it could be. So that's why in a plant, the stem, maybe they're more solid because there's more osmotic pressure. And then other parts, like the more malleable part, like the leaves, they actually have lower pressure, for example. Okay? So the vacuole kind of allows you to control that. All right. Okay. There's actually different types of vacuoles as well, but we don't have to worry about that. So that's plant vacuole. Another specialized kind of organelles are called peroxisomes, okay? So don't confuse this with lysosomes. Right? Lysosomes is general stuff that's inside animals. In peroxisome, it's much more specific. It's a very specific type of thing, okay? It also does breakdowns, right? It breaks down things, right? But it does that in a very specific way. It basically oxidizes things. Okay, it uses oxygen, right? And oxygen, it can be reactive when they're in a certain state. And when you react these guys, it actually gets converted into water. Okay, so again, I don't have time to talk about the actual chemical part of it. The peroxisome is also bound in the membrane, right? It actually can break things down. So for example, it can break down fatty acids and lipids, right? So these fatty acids actually, they just get bound within the membrane, and then within the membrane, again, you have peroxisomes that have specific enzymes within it. Just like lysosome, it has some specific enzymes that works in a specific environment. In this case, they're called oxidases because they use oxygen to break things down, and they get converted into water. When you have oxygen and hydrogen working together, that gets stuff gets broken down into water. Okay, so one thing it can do is it can actually break down ethanol, basically, right? The ethanol will be broken down into pieces, right? In plants, these peroxisomes are just called glioxisome, but it's the same general type of thing, and it converts these fatty acids into sugars. Okay? And just like lysosome, there are diseases that's very specific for stuff that's, you know, the enzymes are deficit in peroxisomes. If there's a specific deficit in the enzymes in the peroxisomes, then actually there's different diseases, disease called ADL, and again, that gets into different types of deficits, and also mental deficits as well. And in this case, there's a lot of motor deficits, so the child cannot move certain ways. So, in some sense, it's similar to lysosome, but don't confuse the two, because the characteristic here is that it oxidizes. It uses oxygen to break things down. Okay, so for example, fatty acids. Okay, whereas the lysosome is more of a general thing, and it can break down all kinds of different things as well. For example, from phagocytosis. Okay. All right. I didn't mention it, but the actual oxidase enzyme, actually, they're called catalases within the peroxisome, but you don't really have to know that. Just the name of the enzymes are found inside a peroxisome. And the general chemistry just, you know, basically does this. But again, you don't really have to know that. Okay, so we're basically through most of the organelles. So we have two more organelles to go, chloroplast and mitochondria, but I'm going to talk a little bit more briefly about that. But first, I want to give you guys a break as I take roll. So again, in the teams of three or four that we more or less set up last time, you know, maybe like that table over there, and then kind of this table into the front and the back, and this table into the front and the back. In some team, try to figure out these questions. Hopefully, they're not too difficult, but, you know, think about it. I'll give you a few minutes, and maybe come up with some answers for some of the questions. Okay? And then, as you guys are doing that, I'm going to take a roll. Hopefully, I can do that this way. You can still see this? Can you guys still see this? Like this? Yeah? Okay. So I'm going to leave it up like that. Okay. And I'm going to go and take roll. So yeah, so why don't you guys in teams take a look at these questions. Think about what the answer might be. Okay. Yuichiro? Is he here? No? Okay. Yushan is here. Leia? Jennifer, Kolo, Sakura, Ingrid, Akari, Akemi, Juno, Makoto, Ayn Kerim. Sorry, try my best. Sayaka, Ben, Beauty, okay. Aoi, Shinji, Susanna. Anybody who's not on the sheet that wants to be? Yes. What's your name?
Inho.
Again?
Inho.
Min?
M-I-N-H-O.
Ho. Kim. Like that? Okay. You just add it, or?
Yes.
Okay. And then that guy.
Alexander. Pittsburgh.
Spell it.
H-Y-T-T-S-B.
M?
N.
Okay. Wow. I have not seen that sequence of letters ever in my life. That's great. Hipsten? Hipsten? Okay. Cool. All right. So I presume you guys add it, right? Okay. Cool. Good. And then if you have questions about previous lecture, whatever, just let me know later or email or whatever. Okay. Cool. Okay. You guys are having trouble with this? Any teams, talk about yourself. Can you see? Can you guys all see? You know what? Okay, to make this easier, I'm going to say, like, this side, kind of look at all the questions, but concentrate on 1 and 2. Okay? And this side, look at all the questions, but concentrate on 3 and 4. What I mean is I want kind of some answers. Number 1 and 2 over here. So, boom, this side, number 1 and 2. Boom, over here, 3 and 4. Now, you should know all these answers eventually, but because we have less time, I want you to kind of concentrate on coming with an answer. So if I ask you one, then you should just say, okay, well, we have an answer on number 2. I think it's blank, and here's maybe why. Okay. All right. Okay. Start talking. How about you guys? I want to hear exchange of information.
Reading number 2.
So basically, you have phagocytosis, right? The question is just basically after phagocytosis, right? From inside this structure to the outside, how many layers do you have to go through?
Oh, you want number 4. How about you?
It's not trying to get it out. It's just that when this process happens, after it came in, how many layers total did you have to cross? Including everything, including the cell membranes, and including the neural network. So how many layers? So if you wanted to go outside, how many actual, lipid bilayers? How many membranes? And it's not, you gotta think about it, right? Okay. What are you guys? 3 or 4 easy?
So one is A.
Right, yeah.
So where are we? Are we in the center?
Yeah.
And like,
On the word in Babylon, so.
Where it was?
All Babylon.
Yeah.
It was duty or. And then gold.
Good discussion. Who's right in Missouri? So actually, in this case, it doesn't. Endosome is something you take up, right? It's not exocytosis. Exocytosis is released. Endosome is actually taken up. So you know that it's not. Or you. I like the discussion. It's good. Next time we're going to play Jeopardy music. Okay, you guys ready? All right, number one, over here, number one. You guys have a consensus answer? Okay, tell me, well, I guess it's hard to tell you why, but maybe tell me where in the lecture you found that. Right. Okay. Cool. Okay. Number two is difficult, right? You guys, you want to? Okay. So tell me why. How did you get to see? I didn't quite get what that means. You're saying it goes through two different things? Okay.
Except that, like, the Golgi is where,
the process moves that goes on.
Yeah. It decides the destination. Or is that just for protein synthesis?
No, that's just for exocytosis. That's just for stuff going out. So in phagocytosis, you take in something from outside,
right?
And then you just digest it only. So, but remember, the cell has two membranes, right? It's a bilayer, right? The lysosome is within one membrane. It's a single membrane-bound structure, okay, the lysosome, and also the vesicles. But the cell has two layers. It's a lipid bilayer of, you know, one going like this, one going like this. So the cell has itself two membranes, right? So if the cell has two membranes, and then you now go in to a structure that then fuses with something that has one membrane, right? then what that means is that to go from the inside to the outside of the cell, you have to first go through that lysosome layer, which is one membrane, and then you have to go through the cell, which is two membranes. So the answer you got is correct. It's just a different way of getting there, huh?
I think we're doing exocytosis instead of
phagocytosis. Oh, right. Yeah.
Yeah. We got the process.
I see. Yeah. Yeah. So remember, phagocytosis is taking stuff from outside the cell and, you know, basically digesting it. And then exocytosis is releasing. So, for example, hormones, are, for example, that you release outside versus phagocytosis, which is eating up, like, nutrients and things like that from outside the cell. Does everybody get that? That's kind of a tricky question, number two, because it's not, it's one of those where I try to give one here or there that's not, I mean, it's in the lecture per se, but you have to kind of figure it out. Okay, so number, what about number three? Over here, number three.
We think the answer is E.
Okay.
The reason is because stuff gets produced in the raw BR and goes through the slow BR to the Golgi. And then there it gets packaged into transport vesicles and then goes out to plasma media.
Perfect. Perfect. Nice. That's a great answer. So first you can also look at all the other ones and they're all not right. Okay. So first of all, we talk about exocytosis. So there's nothing to do with endosomes. Endosomes are part of the phagocytosis part of it, right? So you can eliminate right away A and E. Okay. Then it comes down to B, C, and D. If you look at B, it says it goes through the rough ER, then Golgi, and goes back to the smooth ER. I mean, it's possible, but it doesn't, why would it do that, right? It doesn't go directly from the ER to outside the membrane either, right? So you can't just exocytose directly from the smooth ER, right? So it can't be B, okay? And then C actually doesn't really, doesn't make any sense. It's just smooth, rough, exocytosis, Golgi. Like, there's no logic to it. And then when you look at D, that's actually got the right logic, right? It's being made, remember, in the membrane-bound structures of the ribosomes in the ER. It goes through either to the rough, smooth ER or directly to the Golgi. And from the Golgi, it needs to package that into the right signal and transport it outside the cell. Okay, so that is the right answer. What about number four? Anybody else from here? Number four is very important, actually. Anybody think about number four? Anybody would be okay. Number four, I talked kind of a lot. Anyway.
B. So DNA is replicated to mRNA and then that gets transcribed in the ribosome?
Almost.
Transcribed and then translated in the ribosome.
Exactly. So first, the DNA information gets replicated because you need it for your daughter cells, for example, right? So that information will have to perpetuate, so first you have to replicate that information. And that information, when you need to use it, now gets transcribed, as June said, into RNA, right? So you're just copying, that's why it's called transcription. But from that, you now actually need it to translate it to a protein code, which is the thing that's actually doing the work in the cell. So therefore, the genetic information is going from the DNA to the protein, from replication to transcription to translation. Okay, so here are the answers again, just in case you didn't write it down. Okay, we're all good, I can move on. Yeah, okay.
I have a question about this.
Yes.
So,
this one.
So, So the cell membrane is two layers.
Yeah.
And then when it comes in, it gets happiest. Okay. It combines with lysosome. That's it.
Great question. I know where you're coming from. Yeah. Okay, so the cell membrane is two layers, right? So the question is, why is it that when it comes in, it becomes one layer? Right? That's kind of the question, right? So, first of all, this bilipid layer, when the molecules come in, actually they kind of they recognize something that's on the outside layer. So they recognize the receptor that's on the outside layer. And when it recognizes that, it invaginates, so basically it kind of surrounds it. So after it surrounds it, actually, that inner layer doesn't, kind of the layer that was the inside layer doesn't exist anymore. So it kind of becomes one layer. You know, the precise chemical process I can't really describe, but we know, for example, the lysosome is definitely one layer. Okay, the lysosome is a single. The reason you don't need two layers is because it's already inside a cell. So if it's inside a cell, then it just needs to surround that material in something that's not toxic. So it's just one layer. But in the cell, though, it's bilayer because there's stuff from outside that you want to recognize, and there's stuff from inside you want to recognize. So not only is there receptors and molecules and membrane-bound proteins outside, but there's also the inside part of it as well. So that's why in the cell there's actually, I guess I kind of skipped over this subtlety a little bit, but the cell actually has two layers in it, and that's actually kind of what the characteristic, I mean, I kind of, it's in the slide in the eukaryotic part of it earlier, but I didn't emphasize it as much. But the double layer of the cell allows you to have both the inside influence and the outside influence being controlled for. So in the cell, when you have the double bilayer of membranes, what that means is that whatever goes outside has to recognize that first part, and then goes through that layer and that layer outside to actually go out. So it's much more finer control than just having the lysosome, which just fuses. You know, the lysosome is easy. You recognize something on that one layer, boom, it goes in and joins it. But the cell is much more, think of it as more like the immigration office thing, right? It has more control. It's like you need to get in here and you need to come out. So whatever goes in has to be specific, and whatever goes out has to be specific. Okay? But, as Stephen was alluding to, when the phagocytosis happens, after it evacuates, actually it only needs that one layer. So actually, after it evacuates, it just becomes one layer. Right? It recognizes a certain receptor on the outside, and that outside evacuates and becomes one layer. And then the lysosome also is one layer. So actually, it's very easy if you look at the answer to that part, right? So once you're in here, where my cursor is, how many layers to go out? Well, you have one layer of the lysosome and then two layers of the cell. So it's three layers total. Okay. I recognize that was kind of a hard question, but yeah. I don't give many hard questions. But that's one of them. Okay. So anyway, so now you know the answers. You should all pass it in the exam. So let me, I see the time is actually good for me to just finish organelle and just introduce life cycle without talking a lot about it. Just going to introduce life cycle. But let me first cover the last two organelles before we wrap up this part of it. Okay? So the last two, actually, I'm going to rearrange the slides a little bit, but the last two are, number one, mitochondria, which is what I'm talking about now, and then very briefly, chloroplast, but you don't have to know really about chloroplast because I don't have time to talk about it. Okay, so mitochondria are kind of sub-organelles, so they're organelles within the cell, but it has its own kind of, a lot of things that makes it almost even cell-like, Okay? For example, it has its own DNA, for instance. It's pretty amazing. But what it does is basically they call it the energy, you know, power plant of the cell. Because what it needs to do, okay, is that it converts the right, how do you say, it converts the sugars, right, into ATP. That's basically the big thing, right? So what that means is that you have stuff that's being taken in by the cell, and or that you just have within the cell. And when it needs it, when it needs that energy, it's going to break down that glucose sugar into ATP, which now you can use all over the cell for different reactions, making different things, for instance. Okay? So the process of which it happens is kind of complicated. I'm not going to have time to tell you exactly what's going on. But basically, what happens is that you have an inner set of layers, right? So first of all, let me just say, the difference between mitochondria and chloroplast and other organelles is that they are very, very more cell-like. They are almost like its individual thing. First of all, it has bilayers, right? It has two lipids, right? Usually only cells have that, right? And lysosomes don't have that, right? Or vesicles don't have that. But mitochondria and chloroplast do, right? So the other thing is that in the mitochondria, it actually have an inner kind of complex of membranes. They're called cristae, okay? So this inner complex of cristae is what allows this energy generation process to occur. For those of you who are interested, I can tell you a little bit more detail kind of individually. But basically, inside that that convoluted surface, you have a bunch of proteins that couple the movement, right, of certain atoms, elements, to the generation of ATP. Okay, so the way it does this is the glucose comes in and it loses bits and pieces of its atoms, basically, right? But when it does that, it builds up a gradient, right? Where there's difference in the number of protons, hydrogens, inside and outside the Cristae membrane. And when you build up that gradient, when you now allow those protons to move selectively within that membrane, it generates energy, right? Because when that atom goes back to the side where it has less protons, then what that does is that now that protein can actually use that energy to make ATP, to phosphorylate ATP into ATP. Okay, so this is optional, you don't have to know this, but just for your information, how it actually happens is actually it makes a gradient. It makes a gradient of protons where there's more proton inside versus outside. Actually, outside versus inside. There's more outside versus inside. And it, when the proton comes and flows back in, it couples that to the attachment of the phosphate to ADP to generate ATP. But the short answer, though, is what you should know is that it breaks down the glucose. That glucose breaking down becomes an energy in the form of the gradient of protons, and that allows you to actually generate ATP. So it's like the energy powerhouse of the cell. Okay, so kind of what I said is underneath. The energy process is actually the following, right? So basically, it uses oxygen. Okay, this is why the body needs oxygen, actually. It's kind of funny, but this is why we need oxygen. So the oxidative process goes in and breaks it down, and this is why we breathe out carbon dioxide, because this particular process actually generates carbon dioxide at the very end of it, along with water, and that energy is now in the form of ATP. Okay, so that's the short, kind of the short idea of what the mitochondria actually does. There's a lot of things that I don't have time to go over this precise detail, but that's what mitochondria does. It actually has its own ribosomes, it has its own DNA. I mean, it's kind of like almost like a cell, right? And I'll talk about what we think about that in a second. So that's mitochondria. So chloroplast, again, I don't have time to talk about exactly what chloroplasts do, but basically it's the site of photosynthesis, which is the conversion of that light energy into molecules that you can now use. In this case, sugars. So chloroplasts, I'm not going to talk about in the exam or anything, but basically it's actually the fundamental thing that's what life is about, because life is about being able to capture energy, right? So in this case, humans can't just capture energy from the sun. Well, most of us can't, okay? So it relies on plants, and then we eat plants, right? So plants actually has this very unique ability to actually get energy from the sun in the form of sun ray, and that energy actually gets converted in the form of sugars, right? So I don't have time to talk about how it actually happens. The idea is that light photon actually goes in and kind of gets your atoms into a higher energy state. And it's similar in the sense that in the way that the atoms, the electrons, now goes back down to the lower energy level, that is actually coupled to the generation of energy, right? And eventually that generation of energy allows you to use that energy to make it into sugars. So the reverse process, in some sense, of the mitochondria. If you guys are interested, I can talk about to you individually some more. But the idea is basically you're getting sunlight and converting into energy in the form of ATP, and that ATP now gets converted into sugars, and that gets stored. And then we go and eat them, and then when we eat them, we convert that sugar back into ATP, and then we're going to use it in the form of mitochondria. Okay. Now, the interesting thing is that both the chloroplast and the mitochondria have double membrane, two membrane layers on the outside, the bilayer. So what that means is that actually, and it also has its own RNA and DNA, for instance. So the question is, do they have the same kind of origin? So how do they evolve, right? So this is the earlier part that we thought. So some evolutionary biologists think that they're not just organelles, right? They're probably bacteria early in the life of the cell, right? So within the cell, actually, they can reproduce amongst themselves as well. It's called a process called fission, binary fission, where they just copy their own DNA and then just bud into two, right? If you remove the mitochondria and chloroplast, right, the cell actually can't make new mitochondria chloroplast. It's pretty, I mean, these are some of the evidence for why the mitochondria and chloroplast early in the evolution of the cell was probably some bacteria or some other thing, right? Bacteria in the case of mitochondria, cyanobacteria in the case of chloroplast, that existed on its own, and then eventually some big cell, eukaryote cell, ate them up and then somehow was able to collaborate with them, right? They were going to generate the energy, right? And then the big cell is going to use them. And the big cell is now going to have all this genetic information that's very well controlled, and it can go and now engulf other cells, and it became, you know, much better than the other cells who don't have the mitochondria or the chloroplast. And because of this, it became the dominant kind of life form. It became the dominant cell type. So that's what most biology just tend to think. And again, the evidence is that it has its own DNA, it has its own ribosome, it can reproduce among itself inside the cell. That's pretty crazy. That's pretty good evidence right there. And then if you take them out, you can't actually have new ones. So, you know, so most people think that mitochondria chloroplasts actually are its own kind of little organism. And we actually kind of have our own little organisms in our gut, in our stomachs too. And so when we eat things, actually, it's to please our little E. coli inside the stomach too. So I guess the big message here is that even cells, just like humans and other creatures, right? Even cells have their own kind of cell-like things within the cell. It's not everything is just cell or not cell. Some cells have things in them which kind of collaborates and works with them. And this may have evolved early in evolution. Okay, so that's what mitochondria and chloroplasts are like. This is just a picture of what they look like. This is mitochondria, and mitochondria is over here actually, and this is this is actually a big cell with mitochondria in them, and then this is a big cell with chloroplast within them. Okay. Any questions about chloroplasts and mitochondria? These are really important. I don't have time to talk about the precise process in which they work, but the ultimate goal is to capture energy. So they're very big parts of the cell. They're very important, right? Chloroplasts capturing energy from the light, sunlight, mitochondria using the energy that's there, sugars, breaking them down into ATPs that you can use for other processes. Okay. All right. So I think we're one lecture behind, but that's okay because some lectures are a little bit shorter, so I'm going to cut things down a little bit. The genetics will probably just be very, very brief, okay? And then we'll go through but like today, just try to go through things in a very specific way and make sure you know everything well. I'll just give you a preview of what we talk about next time. I'm not going to talk about it, just give you a preview, okay? So next time, basically, what we're going to talk about is the life of the cell. So what we talked about today and last time is our different components of the cell, the organelles within the cell, nucleus, for example. But next time, I'm going to talk about the time aspect. Today, location, right? This. Next time, what has actually happened in time? And it turns out, one of the fundamental things that cells do is that they divide, okay? And the process of division is called mitosis, right? There's actually two main types of cell divisions, right? One is mitosis, in which an identical copy of the cell gets made. So you make two identical copies from one copy of the cell. The other is called meiosis, and that actually makes genetically like a halved versions of itself. And meiosis, the point of the meiosis is to generate these gametic cells, they're called gametes, which you can actually now use in other ways, so for sex, right? So when sex happens, these gametes are going to fuse one organism's gametes with a different organism's gametes, fuse together. But importantly, now you have recombination of the genetic information. So you have different organisms' DNA mixed in with each other to create actual new organisms. Okay, so that's meiosis. We will not talk about meiosis much, except in the Origin of Life lecture where we'll kind of just tell you briefly what they are. In the making of the gametes that you need to fuse. But next time, I'm going to talk about mitosis, right? And actually, we're going to have time to talk about mitosis and then go to the start of the origin of life as well. But the mitosis is just how cells make copies of itself. Most of the time, actually, the cell is actually going to be resting in this kind of G1, right, and G2, but mostly G1 phase, where the cellular activity is actually going to happen. And basically, I'm going to talk about this whole cycle. And this is the life cycle of the cell, the G1, and then into the S, in which these DNA synthesis occurs, G2, which is the preparation for mitosis, and then mitosis, where the cell division happens, and cytokinesis, where the division of the cytosol, or the other parts of the cell that's not the nucleus, happens, and then going back to G1 in now having two cells. So basically, we're going to go through this process, and mitosis followed by this interphase back to mitosis next time. And if you have any other questions, then feel free to let me know. And if you want to talk for office hours or anything like that, that's fine too. Okay? And these